Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Dylan on crush, the gay best friend is now straight. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think it's bi, personally. So yeah, that's my two cents. That's my two genders that he should be attracted to. I don't know. Corona.
What's poppin', chingona? And the whole world's crumbling and falling apart in front of us, but
very on theme.
I mean, it's happening everywhere all at once. Yes. Not in the good way.
No.
Not in the good way.
No, absolutely not. Let's just get into it. We're recording on a Tuesday, so on Monday for us it was leaked that Roe versus Wade was gonna be gonzo in layman's terms, and that's really fucked up.
It's really dangerous, dude. Like, it's dangerous for women, it's dangerous for gay people, it's dangerous for education rights, it's dangerous for desegregation. It kind of leads into absolutely everything. It's going to lead back to desegregation. They can make it illegal to be gay again. And it wasn't like illegal, but they can now. It's going to get really dark and dusty and crazy. And supposedly the leak came from a clerk. And it's probably on the conservative side because there are more conservative clerks in the Supreme Court than there are liberals. And it would be like a political move to make it would kind of like distract from the January 6th insurrections that the Supreme Court justice, one of their wives was even a part of. So fuck you, Justice Alito. Fuck the Supreme Court forever. You guys haven't been about it. We know about there was a former Supreme Court justice has stepped down when Trump became president, and his son suddenly was in a very crazy multi-billion-dollar business with one of Trump's sons suddenly because that motherfucker stepped down. So fuck him, fuck the Supreme Court. It hasn't meant anything for a while. It shouldn't mean anything now. There's no law that says there should be 9 Supreme Court justices either. So it's really just a big fuck you to America right now and to its citizens. We're seeing what we are and what we mean to the American government. We've always just been numbers, useless numbers, to, you know, spend money and go to work for them. So it's plainly obvious now. And anyone that's ever openly spoke up and had like any kind of like say empower in America, MLK, Malcolm X, they've all been fucking murdered, and we're not surprised. But anyways, you know, shockingly, and that's all I'm gonna say about that. But dude, I'm depressed. I'm pretty defeated today, dude, more than usual, because this is all happening under a supposed Democratic Party. But there's this like German TikToker that I follow that said that only one conservative party in the United States, and it's a Democratic Party. And I'm really starting to believe that this two-party system has not been working. And I think most people are too distracted with their Wi-Fi and trying to just pay for a house that they can't afford. And honestly, it's getting really fucked up out here just to be like a person in the United States. So that's my little soapbox rant. How are you?
I mean, you know, emotional about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard out here, dude. Like, I basically got back from, like, doing some research for this episode, basically, yesterday, and I saw all of that. And I also saw another half of the world, you know, being very distracted, as you were kind of mentioning, with this Met Gala shit. And, yeah, all of it's just fucked, like, we're not even meant to be seeing this shit. How is it that something like that got leaked by a conservative? Like, that's wild. I don't know.
It's done on purpose because of midterms coming right up. They're trying to incite the right, as per usual.
Which is, like, it's very curious. Very curious how that's all turning out. But, Yeah, it's all fucked up. I'm not gonna be the best source on it. You're way more educated on it than I am. But it makes you feel really useless, you know?
Yeah, dude. Because, like, if they... A lot of what Alito was saying in his fucking right thing... I forgot what it's called. I used to, like... This is what I used to study in college. And I don't want to do it because, dear Lord, it's a uphill battle. It's syphilis with the rock going uphill for the rest of your life. Like, there's no glory in that. There's no happiness in that. It's just drudgery, just pain and drudgery. So shout out to the people who are doing the work, you know. Shout out to Christian. If y'all don't know Christian, Christian is a fucking gangster. I'm just gonna just do whatever Christian tells me to do, because, like, honestly, I'm tired of just sitting around and watching shit happen to us. And especially in Texas, we get fucked with the most. Like, it's really bad out here. But yeah, basically they're using, like, the arguments from Obergefell, and Obergefell is what legalized gay marriage. So if you question Obergefell, you're going to question legalizing gay marriage, and that's what the problem is. And so it one thing leads to another, right? So that's going to be the next thing. And there's this much, much smarter people on Twitter that have written books about, you know, America becoming a fascist government. Well, it's never been, like, a democratic free whatever, democratic republic is it's said to be, but there's many brilliant people saying the things that might happen, that are most likely to happen, because they've been working, these people have been working their whole lives to make it so that we're oppressed again, because duh, oppression never ended and the KKK never stopped. So I'm just telling the truth, you know. It's sad out here, but if we just keep tweeting about the Met Gala, nothing's gonna happen, right? I'm not saying, like, you know, overturn the world and revolution, but I would never say that out loud for anyone to hear. But I'm just saying, like, we can't just keep tweeting about shit, you know? Like, we can't keep voting about shit either. Obviously, we're in a democratically led federal government, and that's literally done nothing. States' rights, we're, like, two years away from states' rights being, like, the way that everyone lives their life, and that makes really, really fucked situations for, like, Texas and really Republican states where a lot of black and brown people are already being redlined so they can't vote. It's fucked out here. It's more than one thing. It's everything's on fire all at the same time, everything, everywhere, all at once, right? So, stop tweeting about it. Fucking, let's just meet people in real life and do something about it. Because, you know, honestly, if we started a religion, dude, and we said it was gay and that our religion allowed for abortion, then maybe they could sue us, right? And then they'd have to call into question their own rights on what religion is. And if we, and you can just make up a religion, dude. Like, honestly, it's just they make up a religion. Made up,
so, yeah.
Yeah, let's just make up our own cult, right? And then when they sue us because we're following our religion, we can say, oh, well, you're infringing upon my religious rights. And then they can have a fight about that, you know? They can sue us when it comes to that, to the state, and we can just take it there. Because, honestly, I don't give a fuck. But, yeah, so, I mean, these are just ideas I'm throwing out there, y'all. I mean, I'm just me speaking into the void, honestly. But,
Well, let's throw some links, of course, up on our website. Christian's link, and maybe some places to donate and stuff like that. But yeah, there's not a lot to say. Feeling the nihilism today, so.
Yeah, and if nothing matters, then let's just be fucking nice to each other, right? Like,
for fuck's sake. Yeah,
it's so easy. It's so easy. It's free 99. You don't have to sue anyone. You don't have to talk to the Supreme Court. You just can be nice to people and let people live their lives, you know. It's not hard. But anyways, in gay news.
In gay news today.
Today.
Yeah, I mean, today, specifically the day that this comes out, America Chavez makes her way to the screen in the new Marvel movie, the Doctor Strange movie. I have not seen any Doctor Strange film before, but... America Chavez is a character that I hold dear to my heart, and maybe the casting wasn't what we wanted, but it's what we got and what we're gonna support. I like the actress, by the way. I'm not shitting on the actress at all. I like her. But
I don't know anything, so
yeah,
all love.
But yeah, I hope people see it. I hope she gets her own either show or movie or whatever crumb Disney decides to give her. So.
Or yeah. Crumb. Or, I mean, yeah, this is going to be, like, the first Doctor Strange movie I ever wanted to see just for her. So, right. I mean, great marketing, I guess. I don't know. I really don't care about this movie, but I do care about this character. So I'm probably going to watch it. I just haven't made up my mind when.
Exactly. Definitely when the theaters are a little emptier because COVID is alive and well. So,
not in Texas.
Not here either anymore. I don't know if I've told you about that, but yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dear Lord.
Everyone's given up. So, in a couple of weeks, we'll probably be a little more upbeat because we're going to cover. I'm giving you guys warning. We're both giving you warnings ahead of time because we want you guys to have watched. First of all, you need to have watched what we're going to be talking about today for sure. But also, we want you to have watched what we're going to cover in a couple of weeks because it's cute and like it's heartwarming and not depressing. But that's going to be Crush on Hulu and Heartstopper on Netflix. Yeah.
And Heartstopper is a show, so give yourself a little bit more time. But like, honestly, you're going to zoom through. It's fun,
yeah,
cute watch.
Relatively.
And Crush. I think I watched Crush at like 2 in the morning on a Friday. And
Did you really?
Yes. I had plans and then I came back and I was like, I am watching this movie right now. I'm not even awake, but I'm going to do it. So if I can watch it at 2 a.m. and like it, so can you.
If I can watch it 5 times over a 3-day period, you can watch it
once. Wait, what? Was this your Everything Everywhere All at Once? Is this your like your banger? Is this the one you ride for?
Did you say is it my Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah,
Everything Everywhere All at Once is my Everything Everywhere All at Once. Anyways, we're talking about Everything Everywhere.
If you can't tell what we're gonna cover today, why don't we let them know again?
Yeah, it's the title of this episode. It's Everything Everywhere All at Once. There's just you need nothing else to say, right? Like I'm not gonna try to be clever. That's what this episode's about. I could never be as clever as Daniels can be. So let's just do it.
Let's just do it, let's y'all. Do and it. We're going to probably have spoilers. So like if you haven't seen this movie.
Definitely.
Okay, most definitely have spoilers. So if you've not seen this movie, skip to the end when we tell you that we love you or whatever. But like
right.
This whole episode is dedicated to this lovely movie we're obsessed with. I saw it 3 times and twice within the same, like, I'm saying like a day apart almost. So, I love this movie and all I can say is that please go watch it. And obviously if we're spending a whole episode on it, it's literally perfect. So go watch it.
Absolutely. We're going to start off a little bit not 100% talking about the film, so you have a little bit of time, but be warned. Okay. Anyways, the Daniels. They're not the Daniels, but I'm calling them the Daniels because grammatically it just works better. They are Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. People have a lot more trouble. Oh, this is what I love about them too. People have a lot more trouble with Daniel Scheinert's name than Dan Kwan's. And I'm like, well, that's nice, you know?
That's a nice little change.
Nice little change. They're a writing and a directing team. That's kind of a rare-ish thing in Hollywood, but it's not unheard of. And writing teams tend to do pretty well when they find the right person. You know, kind of like a relationship. They began their career in the music video industry. Have you seen it? Have you seen Turn Down for What, the music video?
Yeah, dude.
My God. I just watched it today. I think I've seen it before, but, you know, it was a nice little, like, thing to watch after having seen so much of their work and then going all the way back to almost 10 years ago when they directed and Dan Kwan starred in the Turn Down for What music video from DJ Snake and Lil Jon.
What a time.
Like, wow.
I remember that song in clubs.
Really? It's just so interesting how it's literally a glimpse of what was going to come. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once and Swiss Army Man, they're like the full-grown man versions of that music video. Like, that was little baby version. Yeah, and also Dan Kwan starring it was a really big deal because, you know, him being Asian during that time, like, it was pretty rare to see Asian men on screen being, like, overtly sexual. And, like, it made a really big impact on the community. Like, it was representation to see this man's boner. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it meant a lot to people, apparently. This is what I'm hearing across, like, interviews everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's proud of them. They don't have that many features under their belt. Like I said, Swiss Army Man, Everything Everywhere All at Once, that's all they have. But, I mean, I still consider them to be auteurs because they like, use the same actors. They have really recognizable styles, even down to the fucking music video for Turn Down for What. And just very specific quirkiness, you know? And queerness is, like, a big thing. But, yeah, but still, like, my favorite thing that I've kind of learned in my research of them is that they don't like doing things like everyone else in the industry. And when they recognize really toxic parts of, like, how it is on set or, like, how people work, they try to break those cycles and they try to break things to make the people yep. who are working for them and making yep. these projects, they try to break those things and make it better. And it's like, hello, US government, do the same thing. So,
yeah, never.
Or really just the rest of Hollywood. Yeah, you've seen Swiss Army Man or no?
No, forgive me. I can't.
Don't it's not be for me. Sorry. I tried to watch it. I tried to put myself through it. And I'm not saying that in a, like, it's a bad movie type of way. It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's just not us.
It's just not for me. It was released in 2016. All white leads, labeled an absurdist black comedy. And the Daniels, they could have stuck to this, right? Like, hiring just other Dans, because it stars Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano. And making that digestible content, because I promise you, there's some white people out here that are not wanting to digest Everything Everywhere. But lucky for us, they did not do that. They did not stick to that awful, awful lane. no offense. They started production on Everything Everywhere. Like, way back in, like, 2010. That's when they started kind of coming up with this project. And they even admit, like, they got kind of nervous about a lot of multiverse-related content coming out. Like, the Spider-Verse and Rick and Morty. But, like, they stuck to it. And filming began in January of 2020, wrapped in March. It's 8 weeks to shoot this whole thing. Oof. Marvel could never. Nope. And yeah, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit on our Patreon exclusive episode. And
exclusive, exclusive, exclusive.
And you mentioned, you know, there's only three major locations used.
Yeah.
Three. And there's some minor stuff, right? And a lot of CGI and stuff. But, like, how did they do this so fast, right? Was it the practical effects? Was it, like, these actors working, like, so you're just absolutely doing amazing. The cast was amazing, and I don't know how they pulled it off, but to me, it kind of feels like the universe put everything into place. Like, yeah. Specifically looking at the cast, right? Originally, this was written for Jackie Chan.
Yep.
That's wild. And it was changed. It was almost completely changed, I feel like, because it then had to star a woman, and that was Michelle Yeoh, which you know so much about. And then also it could have been Awkwafina is playing the daughter. Oh, and Lord. Due to blessed scheduling conflicts, we got Stephanie motherfucking Chu. And yeah, the story that gets to me the most is Kehui Kwan's, because in a really roundabout way, there's his whole story is all about the power of representation in a very
roundabout for short round. No. Oh, man.
But literally, like, it's a circular thing. Like, the gist of it is, like, you can hear the whole thing of it on this podcast called They Call Us Bruce, his interview. We'll link it. Like, he obviously was the character on The Goonies, a very inspirational character that so many people looked up to, and was, like, so many actors, I'm sure, grew up watching him and inspired by him. But he didn't get roles for years and years and years. And then Crazy Rich Asians came out, and he was inspired to get back into the game. He called up an agent, got one, 2 weeks later, he gets an interview for this movie. Like, what kind of universal shit is that? It's wild. But listen to the whole thing. This man is so interesting. He's fantastic. But obviously, the star of the show is Michelle Yeoh.
We love Michelle Yeoh. So get some background on her as, like, an actress and a amazing superstar. Like, she started off as a balletist. Wait, what? How do you say
ballerina?
That? Ballerina. A ballerina. Wow. Wow. Nice. Cynthia doesn't know words today, y'all, as per usual. She started as a ballerina, and she started making these movies in Hong Kong, these martial arts movies where she was kind of like the damsel in distress. But then, like, she got really into the actual martial art themselves. And then she starred in a couple movies with Jackie Chan, Super Cop. And I'm talking, like, 80s. You know, she started being a fucking superstar in Hong Kong. And on top of that, she started doing her own fucking stunts, which is, to this day, people don't do their own stunts, y'all. Like, I need y'all to know this. Jamie Lee Curtis did not do all them stunts, but Michelle Yeoh did. And she learned the actual choreography for all the movements because, you know, much like dance, martial arts is the same shit. It's moving your body in a choreographed way. So if y'all don't know her from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, if y'all don't know her from Shang-Chi, if y'all don't know her from Crazy Rich Asians, if y'all don't know her from, oh my God, I'm fucking running out, Super Cop, every fucking Jackie Chan movie, the woman is an icon and y'all need to catch up. And she's a Bond girl, dude. She was a Bond girl. Like, I need y'all to understand that she has been, like, someone that I have seen in, like, martial arts movies since I was a little kid, and her legacy as a fucking badass artist, as a badass actress. Like, she starred in action movies when, like, women weren't really doing that kind of thing. Women weren't doing their own stunts, but she wanted to be doing these movies with Jackie Chan, and she wanted to stand toe to toe with them. And she's like, what? This shit's like dancing. I can do it. And they gave her these chances, and she kept being a badass. They hung her over a fucking helicopter, like a real life helicopter held up by strings over the Hollywood sign in LA. I want y'all to know that this woman is dedicated in a way that you would never be. She's almost died multiple times doing these stunts for these movies. So my respect to Michelle Yeoh. She's a badass. She can actually fight. And if you don't know her legacy, I'm telling you it right now. So all respect to Michelle Yeoh. I bow down to her. Like, she's a fucking goddess. Like, I can't say more. And I'm so glad that they picked this for her, because I feel like for most of the movies she's been in, she's been like the side character. She's been, now she's kind of relegated to this older woman, like
the mom, like
the mom,
and she's the mom. I just realized, but
she's,
in a good way,
yeah, like the Thea or something, right? But like, she was very much like a sex symbol and very much like a badass fighter, you know. So to give this woman the opportunity to be the lead, not to have like, not to be co-starring next to Jackie Chan, but to be the lead in her own movie, to be an action star, a drama, a family drama, to make an action movie, a family drama, a sci-fi. Like, they combined five different genres into this one movie, and they chose the perfect person to lead it, because she has so much, like, charisma and so much fucking, like, presence just being herself. Like, I'm telling you, anytime that she's, like, even in these interviews, she steals the scene, even in the interviews. And that's an incredible cast that you're looking at, and you still just want to, like, see what Michelle Yeoh is saying. So, I don't know. My respects to this woman. Ugh, legend.
She's literally perfect casting, like, hands down. Like, I can't.
Yes, dude. There was no one else that could have done it the way that she could have done it.
Right.
She was made for this. Like,
mm-hmm. Right, and also this was made for her in a lot of ways.
Specifically.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no one else could do it. There's no one else. It would be a different movie. And I feel that way about most of the cast in this, yep. You know? If it wasn't Stephanie Hsu, it'd be a different movie. If it wasn't Ke Huy Quan, it'd be a different movie. It's just like, all of the cast is actually perfect.
Yeah. No, everyone 10-10. Was perfectly. But I'm just glad that they saw to give Michelle Yeoh her flowers. You know, like, to give her this chance. And I mean, wow. And not just the action part, we'll get into like the family generational trauma shit later, but like, woo, man, they take it there. That's, and she was perfect. She was perfect for it. Woo. But anyways, absolutely. The matrix of it all, you know, I love it.
This is a part where I'm going to tell you guys, we're about to talk about this film like you've already seen the movie. We're not going to go and explain exactly what's going on. Like, we're just going to talk about it because you've already seen it and you already know what we're referencing when we say certain things. And you know who Evelyn is. You know who Waymond is. You know who Joy is. Okay. So if you don't, go watch the movie and come back, please.
And just to clarify, how many times have you seen this movie, Maitha?
Three.
I have also seen it 3 times and in theaters all 3 times.
All 3 times. Yeah. The Dolby IMAX.
Oh, okay. I see you. Fancy. All right.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend watching it in, like, you know, a nice, like, visual fucking spot. And I know they're pricey. I recommend AMC A-List, but, you know, it's all their own.
I saw it on IMAX the very first time. It was amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect movie.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Let's get into it.
This is a monster to tackle. Like, the way that when you watch it, you think to yourself, like, how did they construct this? And, like, we couldn't even find a way to deconstruct this, right? Deconstruct this as in review it and talk about it. It was really, really difficult. And I know that it's not going to be perfect. But, you know, just know that we're trying our best and that nobody, well, actually a lot of people, but we appreciate it so fucking much. And it feels sometimes like it was made for us, even though it probably wasn't.
No, it wasn't. But it's very specifically one thing that we can relate to. So, like, several things we can relate to.
So many things, yeah. It's like the Parasite effect. Remember when Parasite F came out and they're like, oh, that's talking about us. It's like, no, I'm just talking about Korea, said Bong Joon-ho. This is kind of that. It just translates really well to a lot of experiences, so... Shall we begin?
Let's begin at the beginning. Let's do it.
Well, we kind of start before the Everything Everywhere and the All at Once. It's the family, right? You get to know who everyone is. And Everything Everywhere begins and ends with the family, being Evelyn, Waymond, and Joy, and I guess Gong Gong. You know, I guess.
Gong Gong's in there.
He's in there.
He's part of it.
The introduction, I think, is kind of a carbon copy for what's to come, because a lot of it kind of repeats in a different universe. You see Evelyn, the matriarch, she's juggling a lot of goals in her mind, right? And she's working towards all of them in a way that would, like, overwhelm your average person. But she's not just any person, right?
Yeah, they're dealing with tax day, and there's receipts everywhere.
Yeah, and the party for Gong Gong, because he just came from China and they're celebrating Chinese New Year, and also things need to be painted, and also again customers need help downstairs, and also Joy just came over and, like, is asking a lot of questions, and, you know, it's like all of these things all at once. So she's supported by Waymond, who is her husband, and it's pretty quickly obvious that she's not impressed by him or his methods of, like, going through life, because they're very different from how she deals with things. He goes in with this positive attitude and he dances with the customers and he, you know, just doesn't mind the same things that she minds. So she's dismissive and she doesn't, like, notice him. In many ways, she doesn't notice that he literally wants to get a divorce.
Ooh, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And with her daughter, I think with Joy, she tries to do the same thing, but she gets a lot more resistance because Joy kind of demands to be seen. And an instinctual part of Evelyn tells her that she can't ignore those demands the way that she does with other people in her life. This trait of hers, of course, generational trauma, comes from how her father treated her. You know, her dad obviously has, like, instilled a lot of stuff in her, and she thinks, like, Joy is getting a much better deal than she got. And that's not like she's wrong, but, you know, that doesn't mean it's okay, I guess. Daddy issues.
Yes, the daddy issues, and then the mommy issues jumped out.
But yeah, the point is that this whole section is kind of a prelude to this wild ass movie, because it's the family drama portion, but that's kind of the heart of the whole movie. You need this introduction, because the introduction is not just an introduction, it's the whole thing, it's everything. Even though it's not labeled everything.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're watching this first part of it, you know, at first it might seem like inconsequential that these customers and Gong Gong and taxes, everything is getting in between this important conversation that Joy is trying to have with her about, like, accepting her girlfriend, or really at the core of it, accepting her. But It happens over and over again. You know, like, things are just getting in the way, and then we kind of get to see it a little bit later in action form. But yeah, I mean, before we get to the action, we get the sci-fi. Waymond as Alpha Raymond, and the multiverse. All of a sudden, like, we have, she's figuring out that there's multiple universes that can be accessed. But what are we really saying, right? We're saying Evelyn has a lot of unrealized potential.
I mean, yeah, like, there's this idea of who she thinks she is, right? And what she thought her life could have been. And the movie starts as a family drama to center it, right? Because it's about to take you in, like, four other directions. Not even four, like, a billion other directions you didn't expect. And I love that it's so subtle in the beginning, that you really don't know what you're getting into. You're watching what you think is a family drama. And then it quickly, something changes, something shifts in the matrix, literally, as Waymond starts to do, like, these, like, really synchronized, yeah, acrobatic, like, flips and kicks. And suddenly, Squirrel Raymond becomes Eagle Raymond.
Squirrel? Oh, my God, raccoon.
No, have you, this is a whole nother thing.
Oh, is it a different animal? Okay.
No, like, he, it's more of, like, the behind the scenes where he hired a body person to help him become three different versions of himself. And he called the Wayman that has all the soul Squirrel Raymond. Alpha Raymond was Eagle. He was an eagle. And then CEO Wayman was the fox. So he went from squirrel to, like, eagle, his personality. And you see that really quickly. And then you're like, what the fuck am I watching? I thought I was watching a movie about, like, a family drama in a laundromat. And then it turns in quickly into, like, a sci-fi, like, you're entering another dimension. Put on this Bluetooth ear. Bluetooth earpiece. And fucking walk in a circle, change your shoes. And, like,
I love the lo-fi sci-fi thing. Because they could have gone the other way, you know what I mean? Like, the completely white-walled, huge, fancy office. But no, they went so lo-fi. Bluetooth fucking headsets, antennas, and fucking foil. You know what I mean? Like, it was all so, like, lo-fi.
It was very much, like, most of the movie a reference to The Matrix, you know, where Neo gets that call from Morpheus in the office where he's like, turn here, not turn there. And it's like, you know, instead of a cell phone, it's now a Bluetooth, you know?
Yeah.
I love it. Like, it's constantly referencing The Matrix, and these fight scenes are all, like, a reference to The Matrix. And I love that movie. So, chef's kiss. And then, like, the stunt doubles that they had for Wayman, like,
Did they even have the same guys? Because Ke-Huy Quan is, like, actually very skilled at all of those things, too. He was a stunt double.
Yes, yeah. But in that instance, they use the same brothers. I have their names. They're a brother martial art duo. One of them starred in Shang-Chi.
Oh, he was a stunt double for, like, yes, Shang-Chi himself? Okay.
Nice. No. He was, like, an actual, like, person that Shang-Chi fought in.
He wasn't a double, stunt double at all then.
Yeah, but in this one, he was obviously Wayman's body double. And he was the one doing all the moves. His names, I think, it was brothers Andy Lee and Brian Lee. They're the same brothers with the butt plugs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the smaller one, the less buff one, he was Raymond's body double for that scene. And they actually met Jackie Chan before they did this movie, after they did Shang-Chi. They have their own YouTube show and everything. They're amazing. They're a blast. And they choreographed a lot of the fight scenes with Michelle Yeoh, especially the butt plug scene. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. We love it. But yeah, like, back to the IRS building where they meet Jamie Lee Curtis, a.k.a. Deidre.
There's that moment when Evelyn is learning to verse jump when, you know, there's an obvious comparison to, like, very specific ADHD type of distractions because yeah. she's, like, she's supposed to be listening to the IRS agent, but she's literally in another world, you know, because and she has to, like, fake it and go into, like, autopilot is, I think, what they describe it as. And, yeah, I love that because they mentioned that, like, they wanted this person to have, like, an undiagnosed ADHD kind of.
Yeah.
The way that, like, the multiverse kind of works in this, it makes a lot of comparisons to that. So having that kind of a mind, you know. So maybe in a way it was saying, like, oh, Evelyn's character is extra good at this sort of thing because of, like, her ADHD.
Yeah, that would, yeah, I see it. I see, look at that. See, it's why we talk, because something unlocks when every time we do talk and I see something different. And I'm like, ooh, yeah, the multiverse, ADHD, I see it. No, yeah, I mean, that introductory scene and her quickly shifting to meet the Wayman, and then the villain is introduced in name only, you know? And I loved it.
Jobu Tupaki.
Like, Jobu Tupaki, like, what? I don't even know what that means. Like,
ooh, do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please tell me.
So, Jobu Tupaki is, like, it basically means nothing, because one of the, it was Daniel, I think it was Dan Kwan, who was trying to figure out baby names and really liked sound, like, names that sounded like they, like, flowed really well, like Jobu mm-hmm. Tupaki, like, it mm-hmm. has, like, a, I don't know, like, a little flair to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was one that he came up with that his wife was like, no, and, but the only reason I actually interrupt you to bring that up is because they mentioned in an interview, this is cut from the movie, but there's mm-hmm. a scene in another universe where Joy is like spaghetti and meatballs. And,
oh, yeah, yeah, this part.
And
yeah.
It's like the first universe, I guess, where she ever feels accepted. So that's where she gets her name within the film that is not actually in the film. But the name itself, like the verbiage, means nothing. But the moment for her was so special, you know.
And they said that scene would come out on Blu-ray, probably.
I will quite literally buy a Blu-ray. Like, I don't have one.
You don't even got a Blu-ray player, but you're going to buy it. I got one, so I'm hype. I'm
I'll
getting
figure it
Blu-ray.
Out. Okay. But anyways, yeah. Jobu Tupaki.
Yeah, so apparently there's this, like, you know, supervillain out to get her. And specifically her.
Specifically Evelyn. Many Evelyns
Evelyn,
in many universes have died.
Yes, and no one's telling her why all the other Evelyns have died. So I find that automatically suspicious, right? Like, I'm like, oh, okay. What's going on here? This is getting... the plot is thickening.
What is going on here?
And at this point... there's just an incredible fight scene between Wayman and the two stunt doubles, the two brother martial art duos that are in this movie a lot getting beat up, Andy Lee and Brian Lee. It's hilarious. The two brothers fight technically, but it's really Wayman fighting the security guards, and you're introduced to, like, some real, like, old school references to, like, Jackie Chan martial style, Hong Kong style movie martial arts. And it was lovely. It was so amazing to see someone get beat up with, like, a fanny bag and, like, a little cute
yes.
piggy on it. Like,
ultimate
I
daddy.
I loved it. I was like, I live for this, like, old school fight scene where this is happening. Like, it really did something for me. It made me really happy. It was growing up watching all of that and, like, doing martial arts. It's just so cool.
Absolutely.
And then, like
go on.
No. I was basically going to end my point there. So you're good.
Oh, I see. Okay. What I love about that scene is that in Evelyn's eyes, like, she just, like, in between the switch of going from sci-fi to action, in the in-between, there's this moment where she knows she's getting in trouble, and she's just discovered some crazy shit about the universes, but she stops. She puts everything aside to talk to Waymond about why he's asking her for a divorce. Because that's how much she cares. She, like, actually cares about this dude, and she shows it in, like, these angry ways, which in this case is like, just because your brother don't got a divorce doesn't mean that you can get a divorce. And you're all of these things. And she's just, you know, she spent the better part of the beginning of this movie kind of looking down on Waymond. And then all of a sudden he turns into fucking super Waymond and, like, shows her, like, I'm a fucking badass. And yeah, it's not technically him, but it's kind of like her changing the way that she sees him. And I think that that's really beautiful.
No, yeah, like, a lot of the movie was her realizing the person that she had, and it had to be because of these multiverse jumps that she got to see, oh, wait, like, this is who he is with me, versus, you know, here's action Waymond, and here's romance Waymond, and she's like, well, I want all of the Waymonds, and that was
really
beautiful.
She wants all of the hers, all Evelyns.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is at first she thought she wanted all the Evelyns when she really was always all of the Evelyns. Like, we contain multitudes, boo. Like, you can do all of that. You can be all of that, you know? So I love that, like, concept that you just brought up, like. And then also the same is true with Joy and yeah. And her capabilities as a character in these multiverses. And what I thought was interesting when they were talking, when the directors were being interviewed, I think it was like a South by Southwest Q&A where they said, we thought it'd be interesting to make the hero our parent and the villain us. And yeah. I thought that was, like, such a cool way to see it, because in a lot of ways. Yeah, yeah. In a lot of ways, we are the villains in their story, right? Like, but at the same time, they are the heroes in their story. And there's room for both, you know, that we can both be the villain and also not be the villain. And they can be the hero and also be the villain. And I love that all of these things are happening all at once. And that's, like, part of the beauty for me is, like, Joy is, you know, being dismissed by her family. She's being rejected by her mom and not being seen by, you know, fully in her true, honest self at the very beginning of this movie. Yeah. And what this movie is asking these characters to do is to use science fiction and action and comedy and romance. They're exploring every single part of their humanity in this movie. And, like, they found the most universal way to tell it, which was by being super specific. Because we talk about this all the time, where, like, even though, you know, you can't just make a show or a movie and try to make it universal. Like, the more specific you are in that telling of a story, the more universal it will end up being. You know, not everything has to be catered to everyone. And from what we've seen is that a lot of, you know, cis white men have been upset or don't connect or don't really get it. And it's true, like, even from witnessing and watching the movie with men, most of the women that walked out, or most of the femme people that walked out, were more connected, more, like, spiritually connected to the whole movie. And they were moved differently from the men, especially
I can
the
vouch for that,
white
for
men.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, I'm obsessed with Joy's character just because, duh.
Bro, my absolute favorite non-crying part was, because there's a crying part and there's non-crying parts.
There's plenty.
Was meeting and getting to know Jobu Tupaki, because this character fuses the sci-fi and action parts of this movie, and it adds an extra boost of comedy, right? It does all of these things all at once. And and why does it do that? It's because, you know, what they say, the most depressed people have the funniest shit to say. So
yeah, they do.
Jobu fucking Tupaki. And you learn a lot about Joy's inner thoughts really, really quickly with this character, because you see that she hates being limited by people from the very first, like, outfit change or whatever, she runs into that cop and that cop is trying to stop her, and she's like, can't or you won't allow me to, you know, this is the difference. And she's just like, completely makes all these cops fuck off. And I love that because, like, yeah, she's not, no one's gonna, like, limit her. And the next thing you kind of learn is that she's very lonely. That's why she does everything as Jobu Tupaki, right? Because that's why she's constantly on the search for someone else who gets it. And also, like, in the real life, if you think about the flashback that Evelyn has of her being, like, of Joy being emo as a teenager, you know, it's like that acting out on, like, that flashiness and that, like, all of that, all of Jobu Tupaki is that loneliness, is that, like, depression, is that the rejection, limitation. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then there's the part of Jobu Tupaki's storyline where Gong Gong specifically is so headset against everything she represents. He's the one that's the most adamant that she needs to be destroyed because he's, like, the eldest generation. And, like, that whole idea is probably internalized in Evelyn. That's why Evelyn is getting that, like, information.
Oh, for sure.
Because, like, yeah, so she's seeing that her Joy is so far from the generation that raised her. And that's a part of her. There's a part of her that instinctually wants to destroy Jobu Tupaki too. And she has to fight that, you know? She has to fight against her instinct, which is to fight Jobu, you know?
Yeah, because there's this idea that Evelyn has that she's, like, losing her daughter to this other being, you know, this evil thing inside of her. And it's just, that's just not the truth. And what's funnier throughout the movie is that, like, meanwhile, their alter egos, or I'm gonna call them alter egos, their multiverse versions of themselves are all trying to kill each other or save each other. And they're all in the same room all the time with each other most of this movie. Right. And switching back and forth between these, like, worlds and these dimensions and these characters and these genres, honestly. And there's one really beautiful, funny, random moment that turned into a Ratatouille reference that they changed for legal reasons, obviously, to Raccoonie. And apparently that is Randy Newman's voice. You think it was for legal reasons? I don't think you can just say Ratatouille and then, like, do the whole thing and make a reference. They're probably like, fuck it, let's just be funnier. Like, let's just do something more ridiculous.
I thought it was, like, Raccoonie simply for the fact that it's in a different universe.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought so too. But also on top of the fact that I don't know if maybe Disney would want to sue them for the likeness of Ratatouille.
That's definitely possible.
To me, it would make sense. I would, you know, if I was Disney and evil, you know, I'd sue these random dudes that were trying to make fun of Ratatouille, you know. I'd sue them for the likeness. Like, don't put, we didn't agree to this. But, but I thought that was hilarious. Also, shout out to Harry Shum Jr., yeah, who was also in Glee.
My boy,
what's good?
Harry Shum and Stephanie Hsu. And, like, a lot of these people the Daniels have worked with in the past, like on Nora from Queens, Nora. Which is why they were going to have Awkwafina originally. Yeah, I love that they bring them back, that they stick to their own, you know, like family, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Fast and the Furious thought they had family down, but nope, Daniels
no,
do.
No, this shit is family.
Yeah, yeah. Family por vida.
Por vida, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, these other genres or these other universes or these other potential lives for Evelyn, however you choose to see it. We also have this melodramatic romance film going on where she's processing her marriage and her basically her life without Joy and Waymond, right? And then, like, the return of Waymond. And yeah, I mean, it's I love that they're shot differently.
You want me to get into that?
Yeah, that's let's a reference. Get into it.
Yeah, so the romance part of this movie is a direct reference to Wong Kar-wai's In the Mood for Love, which was another masterpiece and also definitely a Hong Kong movie. The cinematography is the same. You know how you see those characters
as that film, yeah.
Yes, cinematography is the same. The characters are very much on opposite sides of each other, trying to understand each other. What I do find hilarious about this world, though, about this romantic world, is that it's literally just her real life. You know, like, they use actual clips of her from, like, Crazy Rich Asians. And, like,
oh my God.
Actual, mean, yeah. like, Bond, like, red carpet from
the one with the red leather
life.
Jacket?
The which one?
The one with the red leather jacket. Was that real?
Red leather jacket.
Was it like fighting like over like a table? She's like, whoa. And she has like
a red. Oh, no. Jacket. I think it's a direct reference to one of the movies that she's in with a jacket looking super amazing. Yes. No, all those are references just to herself. And then some of them are just like shots of her on the red carpet, like real life. And I love that that version of her is just her. Like, she became a movie star.
And she became reused.
Yes, they just reused the real life clips, and I love that. And also the reference to In the Mood for Love, which if y'all haven't seen that movie, just pretend they're both lesbians, and it hits different. Okay, it's basically about lesbians that cannot be together, because why would straight people not be together? I don't understand. Exactly. It's obviously gays. Only the gays would get it. You know, the gays, theys, and thems. We the cuties. We understand. But it references that movie so beautifully, and every time there's a scene where they're talking to each other, and I've heard it 3 times, and I've cried 3 times, is when he says, I think I would be pretty happy just doing taxes and laundry with you. And like
I think the whole way, that whole section, that Waymond and Evelyn figuring out their marriage part hit people in relationship a lot more than it hit me.
Yeah.
Because it took me until the 3rd time, which was yesterday for me, to finally let that one get to me. It was the first time I cried over that scene where he says that I think I would have been happy just doing taxes and laundry with you in another life. But I didn't get it.
At first,
I did on a very surface level way until yesterday, and I was just like, holy shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, dude, like it probably does. It's 100% gonna hit people, like, I guess in
long-term relationships,
because we're like already kind of exposed in that way, so we're like in touch with that part. But like, dude, I cry every single time I hear that. Every time I'm just like an ache in my body, bro. Like, I'm just like, oh, word. Yeah. But that's the thing, In the Mood for Love has that same kind of ache to it, so it's a perfect reference to that movie, because although those words aren't said, there's just so much in that aches in the same way. So please go watch In the Mood for Love, if anything, just so you can have that kind of moment in a very different movie, but beautifully executed in this one.
It's so interesting. The same way that they did, obviously, Rakakuni and the romance section, they also did, apparently they tried to make this hot dog fingers universe. The Bollywood movie, yes. But no, I'm talking about specifically between her and Jamie Lee Curtis's character with the hot dog fingers. That's supposed to be Carol.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they were trying to reference Carol with that.
That makes sense, actually. That makes complete sense.
Which, I see it, but I don't. You know what I mean? They admit that it wasn't perfect. But yeah, you know, they had reference films for all of these different universes. And Carol was the one for this, like... And in my mind, I love it because it's like, that's how far out Evelyn has to go into the realm of possibilities for her to be a lesbian, is it needs to be a world where at the beginning of time, hot dog fingered, like, beings destroyed regular fingered beings. And it's like, that's how far-fetched it is, but it also was like a way for her to like understand that love is just love. You know, and that everybody is capable of being loved. And that was a whole really beautiful underlying storyline that I think was also somewhat necessary for her to, like, be truly accepting of Joy.
Yeah, she needed to explore that part of herself. And dear Lord, did she explore it? Oh, my God.
It was hilarious, but it's also, like, kind of, like... I don't know, it was just kind of cute, right? Because she gets to this realization about Wayman's method of things.
Oof.
And she tries to be more like him, which is beautiful in many, many ways. But one of the things that she says is, like, even in a world where your fingers are hot dogs, you humans would get really good at using their feet.
Oh,
you know, it's just like...
So good. That was so good.
Like, what the hell? Why am I crying about this? Yeah. It's really interesting. But yeah, anyways, she does this and she's finally like trying to reach Joy because she's reconciled that Joy and Jobu Tupaki are now one person. She tries to approach her that way. She's like meeting her on her level, and then there's this fucking everything bagel. That is whatever. She put everything on a bagel, but I think what this like round thing is, it's her depression, right? It's her nihilism. It's like
her suicidal ideation. Yeah,
basically
it's real. It's manifested into an everything bagel.
Yeah, and it's sucking everything in because the world will make you feel that way, and it makes everyone, not everyone, but like a lot of people feel that way. And even though she feels so lonely in those moments, it was almost like saying like everyone can feel this way. Evelyn feels this way too. She wants to go into a bagel. I love that they use the fucking everything bagel too, because it makes you just stop just short of just being absolutely depressed watching that, because it's kind of funny.
Yeah, because it's mad dark when you really just kind of take away the everything bagelness of it. It's dark.
It's dark.
And that's like a very honest, specific thing. Again, that because of the specificity, it's become universal. And this idea of tackling mental health and depression and suicidal ideation in a movie where there's talking raccoons and hot dog fingers, like, it really centers it back. You know, it gives you, like, yes, we've gone on this ridiculous ride, but ultimately it's always been about human connection and empathy. And, you know, how crazy would it be if instead of rejecting the people we love to the point where they need to escape and leave this place into an everything bagel, why don't we just, like, love people and see what happens, see if they decide to stick around? And to really talk about that, and to talk about, you know, how it feels to be the child of an immigrant, to be the child of someone rejecting you, to be the child of, like, generational trauma, to be just the next in line to receive it. And to see a lot, I mean, I'm gonna cry thinking about it, is that, like, you know, Evelyn finally broke that cycle of her own generational trauma with her father, and the fact that she was willing to, you know, acknowledge that it was pain in the first place and to break that trauma in order to save her daughter. I mean, wow. Talk about mommy wounds.
About millennial fantasies.
Yeah, it's like, wow, like, what a concept to not be rejected and accepted and loved as you are, with all of your faults, with all the Jobu Tabakiness inside of you, right? Like, and to not be rejected by your immigrant mother. Wow. Like,
what I love is how they express it so, like, visually, right? The way that they do everything else in this, they show everything in a multitude of universes. And they go to, they become piñatas, they become cartoons, they become rocks. And no matter what, in all those universes, they're looking for each other.
Yeah.
And, like, damned if that didn't fucking get me.
Woo!
And it's not perfect. Like, you know, Evelyn's not gonna have a perfect way with words. She even tells her, like, you know, they finally get to be back to the family drama portion of this at the end, and they're outside of the car and everything, and she's telling her, like, you think I want to be here with you? You think I want this? And she's being harsh, and she's being honest. Mm-hmm. About everything, because, and I think that's what, you know, Joy wanted all this time, is like the truth, the raw, the full attention of her mother. And her mother gets to the point where she's just like, but there's got to be a reason that even though nothing matters, we matter to each other a lot.
In every universe. Yeah.
In every universe, everywhere, I'm always going to like want you there. I'm always going to want to be here with you, even though it hurts more than like anything in the fucking world.
Oh, man, I'm crying. Our trauma's coming
out. I'm
fine. Like, just talking about this movie, I'm like, word, let's slow down. Like,
yeah, I mean, look, Joy, before this moment, Joy rejects her love. When even when her mom, like, fixes her own shit and like wants to meet her at her level and is taking the Wayman approach towards her. Joy is rejecting it. She's not taking the love in easily. She still wants to fucking fall into a bagel. And when Evelyn literally defeats her issues with her father, because in this like action universe, her father is physically holding her back, and she fights her fucking father. She fights a generational trauma and literally, and then she goes after her, and Joy is like, just let me go. She says, okay, I'm gonna let you go. And then she can't let her go. You know, it's, and then you, I don't know, the part of obviously when she's pulling her back out of this bagel, and then Wayman helps her, and then Gong Gong helps her. It's like reverse generational trauma. That was really cool.
But they also kind of like deep, because she did go through, you know, and this is the thing that they even say when in their interviews, is that like the hardest thing in the world to do is to change your mind. And so even this character is just like Evelyn, you know, Joba Tabaka is just like Evelyn, in that she's struggling to change her mind to see things differently. And so she does go through the freaking bagel. Like, she does go into the bagel, but she had to change her mind and come back out on her own.
Her hand pops out.
Yeah. That's like, she decided to come back. She was like, nah, I want to be here. I want to be alive. And I was like, fuck, let's go there too.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, it's not all, like, you can't actually put 100% on Evelyn or anyone else. Joy's depression.
Yeah, like, in the end, like, Joy decided to stay because she saw that these things were there in place. But she did go through, you know, and she changed her mind. She quickly came back out, but like, she did go through, and she had to change her mind at the end. That feeling of rejection, she had to let it go. All the shit that her mom and her grandpa and the world had put on this character, she had to just let it go to come back, you know. And that's like a whole nother level of like mental health shit that like doesn't really get talked about in such an honest way, that like, even though you have all of these people rooting for you, finally you could still go into the bagel, you know, like, so and you say that lightly, it's not the bagel we're talking about, but still, like, she decided to be here, she decided to come back and give it a chance, you know. And I think that was also like, it just spoke directly to that choice, you know, that you do have that choice ultimately, and she came back. So I think that was saying a lot without actually, you know, verbalizing what they're talking about. I thought that was really, really beautifully done, and like, god dang, it hurt. It still hurts.
Yeah. If I don't see Jobu Tupaki costumes this Halloween, I will be judging all of you.
So. Especially that like cowboy, like
the Elvis looking one. The Elvis looking one.
Yeah, I feel like that had to be a reference to, like, an anime or something. I loved it. And then like she did the My Big Comfy Couch towards the end with that like clown outfit.
Well, you know, I noticed that one because you mentioned it before, and I was like, I'm gonna pay special attention this time. But what I noticed about it, I get the reference, but what I noticed about that specific costume, because that's in a moment where she's kind of spiraling and like kind of losing her shit in a different way. It's also all the pieces of it are pieces of the rest of her costume. So it's all her identities kind of stitched together.
Oh, that makes sense.
So if you guys rewatch it, like, pay attention to that final kind of costume where she looks a little bit like a clown, because it's like all the pieces of like these different costumes that she's worn, even the one where she's like fighting the cop and they turn into like fucking Latin dancers.
Oh yeah. And yeah, like, it's, I don't know, this whole movie is amazing because, like, in, you know, they say, if nothing means anything, why can't we just be nice to each other? And like, if, you know, taking that nihilistic point of view, like, why aren't we just good to each other then? Like, if nothing absolutely means nothing, like, let's just do it. Let's just be nice to each other. How hard is that? And it, there is one scene that always makes me cry as well, and it kind of leads back to, if nothing means nothing, then why not? It's the scene where they're in the rock world.
Yes. Everybody's favorite scene, and also like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, so like, it's happening directly after this moment of like absolute chaos, and then you reach this like serenity in the rock world, and then you finally get to see Jobu Tsubaki. Tsubaki is just someone who's like, please just explain these feelings to me that I feel, you know, explain to me why I feel so alone in this, like, mom, be a person.
I just wanted to see if you saw something different than me or a different way. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, you want to be seen and you want to see things and you want to feel less alone. And you want that from, you know, your parent, you know? And, woo! God damn, the way that she falls over the cliff and then Evelyn falls down the cliff with her. And she's like, nah, we doing this together, me and you. And, ooh. God damn.
Yeah, it's supposed to be this moment of like relief from all the chaos, and it's where Jobu Tsubaki like centers herself, right? Everyone has that moment where you're just like, fuck it, I'm just a rock. And
just be a rock.
Yeah. But I don't know. I love it that it's like, yeah, her honest moment. Like her honest moment of like, I just wanted to see if you saw something I didn't. Like, yeah, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's not the first time that someone's been like, you know, what's the way out of this? You know?
Yeah. Give me a reason I'm that I should down, still be here.
I'm bringing you down with me, but like...
She's like, why should I exist? Do you know how to get out? Not just that. She's just kind of saying, why should I exist? Why are we here? What is the meaning? There is no point. Like, I don't see anything in this. And that's, you know, where her mom's like, no, like, literally, fuck it. The point is that we're here, you know? And like... I just, oh my god, the way this movie talks about really heavy shit and is able to make it just like so funny and so simple, you know, like it doesn't have to be like this long discussion. It's just literally like, we're a rock, you're a rock, I'm a rock, I'm happy as a rock, you happy as a rock, cool, like vibes. And I don't know, this movie just really, really makes you feel good in the end, and it really makes you feel like, yeah, like kindness and empathy and like patience. Like maybe if we all had that for each other, it would be a better place out here. And it would be. But you know, the forces that have all the power are fighting, making us fight over like identity politics. When really it's like, are we all oppressed? Yes. Okay, cool. Like let's do something about it since we're all oppressed. But, you know, like, make people hate each other because of like, I don't know, fucking racism is so stupid. It's just like, so what, bro? That's a waste of time. Like,
all of this is so fucking stupid, yeah.
Sexism, homophobia, all of it. It's a waste of time. Like, what? Like, just truly, live your life.
Truly. What fucked me up the most about this experience, my first time watching it, surprisingly, was actually outside of the movie, because I get out of the movie and I see a text message from my mom, who I haven't talked to in a couple of days. And she asked me, like, out of, and I promise you, it's out of nowhere, she asked me if I'm okay.
Wow. Like,
and then she proceeded to be nice to me, like, all weekend long. I was fucked up about it. I told my counselor about it. I was like, bro, I don't know how to feel.
You're like, what is this? Like, is this the universe? The universe is telling me something.
Like, that's why I, like, when I rewatched it, when I rethink about it every single time, and obviously, if I haven't made this clear, I'm comparing Evelyn to my own mother, because they are in many ways.
As we all are. As we all are.
Yeah, in many ways, God, she's similar to my mom, you know? But, yeah, God, where was I going with this? The point is that, like, my mom had a fucking instinct in her to fucking check in on me, which was crazy. And the same way that, like, Evelyn's mom had an instinct. But maybe, like, all these people, like, that aren't always nice to us, but have an instinct to care for us, you know?
Yeah, like, they're just fucked up.
Maybe it's all fucking worth it. I don't know.
No, yeah, like, people, they say that people only love you as much as their demons let them. So, you know, people have shit. And this movie was about getting over your shit so that you can get out of your own way and be happy. Because Evelyn just needed to get out of her own way to be happy. That was it. So did Joy. Joy just needed to get out of her way to be happy. She was just like, oh, wait. It's, yeah. Like, all these things are going to keep happening to me, but I'm actually the one that's going to fucking, like, try to change them and be a catalyst to that change. Like, Joy was like, fuck that. I'm not taking this shit. I'm not writing life the way you did. I'm going to do it different. And then, you know, in many ways, you become the villain to these people. But I had a point. I don't know where it went.
No, I followed you all the way there.
Okay, cool.
I get it. And I don't know. Should we end out this off in the cute little way? Like, the fact that Joy's girlfriend is giving Gong Gong like a ride on his wheelchair around the party, and how cute it was. And Evelyn smoking weed.
Fucking adorable. Like, the gayness of it all. Like,
the queerness of it all. Like, they didn't have to do that for us, but they did.
They did. I was like, whoa. And you're queer? Like, and you like girls? Like, what? Bitch, I fuck with you, Joy. I fuck with you.
It was so cute, the comparison of Joy's girlfriend to Waymond. Too, oh,
you know, that was like, so sweet,
the universe balancing out in that way.
Yeah, there's this heavy dark presence, and then there's like a goofy light presence right next to them. I love that energy.
It's like the bubblegum and the vampire Marceline. Queen Marceline. Yeah, like, fuck,
same energy.
Yeah,
we love to see it. Oh my god, sweet. Y'all, even us talking about it does not convey the feeling of watching this movie and what it feels like and what you're healing as you watch it, honestly. And attacked. I wouldn't say I felt 100% healed, but you feel really good afterwards.
Well on my way. Yeah.
In a way, it gives you kind of like a little path. And a lot of movies don't do that. A lot of movies do not provide pathways and how to go exist. Yeah, a lot of them just end. A lot of them are just dramatic movies to be movies. But, like, this is doing a lot more, and it's just carrying a lot more weight to it. And it's doing it perfectly. So if you can't tell by now, I give this movie 5. If I could, I'd give it 7 banduses. Like, it's perfect to me.
Yeah. I highly recommend the whole episodes that the other podcast called They Call Us Bruce. Mm-hmm. Did, where they interviewed Michelle, they interviewed Stephanie, they interviewed Daniel, they interviewed Ke Huy Quan too, like all of them. And they have another separate episode where it's like, you know, a bunch of entertainment Asian folk talking about what it meant to them. They definitely have a slightly different perspective as us, right? They're Asian after all.
Yeah.
So they don't talk about the queerness as much, but okay, you know, they have their perspective.
Yeah, respect. What did you give this movie? Obviously
0 -10 cafecitos. Like, I'll watch this every day for the rest of my life if I could.
Same. I can't wait to watch it again, honestly. It'll be my 4th time watching it if I watch it one more time. And you know what, honestly, down.
I'm totally craving, like, I can't wait until I can watch it in my bedroom, because the way that I have to hold back crying in a theater is,
oh,
just,
dude, you held back?
Oh, absolutely. And I cried a lot, but like, oh, I feel like I was holding back like sobs, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, dude, yeah. I was dealing with a lot of family trauma the day that I went to go see that movie, and I happened to have listened to Beach House on a loop that day, so I was in the perfect emotional state for that movie. Oof. I was like, oh, look, my trauma, and I just listened to Beach House on a loop. Let's do it. Like, I didn't know what I was getting into. I literally saw like 20 seconds on Instagram like a month before, and I reminded Glow, and she bought the tickets, and I had forgot, and it ended up being the best thing I've ever seen. So
yeah, I love it. I don't know what else to say. Like, go watch it. Like, I mean, you probably didn't get this episode if you haven't already watched it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So congratulations, you watched it.
Yay. But yeah, do you have any announcements other than to tell people to watch this movie?
Yeah. My announcement is that our 5th anniversary is coming up. We never really do anything for it. We might do something for it. If so, we should. Then we'll post about it on CYC Podcast, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, support us by going on Patreon. We did a whole full-length episode before this just talking about how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun. And we've been posting, like, I feel like we've been posting as much on Patreon as we have on here, and a lot less people are over there listening. So go check it out.
Yeah, we have fun over there. We're a lot more unfiltered, and
Yeah.
And, you know, our podcast baby's turning 5. So, you know, we should. Like, if we had a kid, it would be in kindergarten.
Yeah, we'd be sending it off to school and going back to a 9-to-5.
No. God. Depression. But yeah, so if, you know, y'all want to subscribe to our Patreon, you know, there's different tiers and y'all can help support to, does no one use the word Latinx anymore? I don't care. Who gives a fuck? Y'all can call me anything, but don't, you know, call your mama first. You know, that's all I got to say about that. Totally. But yeah, support to queer Latinx people making some cool shit on their own. And Maite fucking edits these episodes by herself, y'all. So y'all need to give her a round of applause. This is when I would, like, get the machine and go, ah, yeah. So, round of applause. Support your local gay people, you know? We do this shit on our own. And we're going to continue doing this shit on our own, as per usual. So, shout out to the gays and the theys and the thems.
And it was Lesbian Visibility Week, I think, like, last week. And so no, we're invisible, one saw me. Right? Like, rude.
We're invisible now, right? Like you said, we're invisible. We forgot it. Yeah. I was told to be visible by someone who did not make me visible. I'm upset. They're the ones you that first. Are like, yeah. It's Lesbian Visibility Day. And I'm like, I don't know. Sure. Whatever. I'm never visible, but go off.
Seriously. I feel like during Lesbian Visibility Week, was the most invisible that I felt in a long time. And that, I don't know if that was coincidence or not, but, like, damn, I'm just realizing that. Realize.
No! No!
That's no! Fucked up, y'all. You need to check your fucking straight people, man. Anyways, oh, moving on.
Oof. realize. Yo, we taking it back to Facebook in this, but anyways, y'all love to see it. We love y'all. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, 5 stars only.
Shout Leave us a review people. If you actually like us, if you actually think that we matter in the grand scheme of things.
And if you don't, then ignore us and continue on living your life. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.